AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It's an absolute privilege to welcome back Tori Van Hoot. We had her on the air with us back in December to talk about a brand new gig that's coming up here. Axios, the news service, has launched Axios Twin Cities. Tori is the point person there, one of the point persons, with Nick Halter as well. And she's kind enough today to join us to talk about the very first Axios Twin Cities newsletter delivered today to your email. Hi, Tori. How are you?
Hey, I am great. What a day. Let me tell you, I couldn't even sleep last night, so I'm running on fumes here, but it's been an exciting day.
Congratulations. I mean, whenever you're starting a new project like this, I don't care what you're doing, it's a lot of work. I know you've been putting in a lot of time, so congratulations on the new newsletter.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
I did want to ask, you know, I know Axios is kind of starting to target individual markets here. Any, you know, did they feel as, I mean, I'm glad they're coming in here, because I feel as, especially when we lost City Pages and the Southwest Journal, I think there was a void in news here. Is that Axios's mentality, is that, you know, hey, there's a real need here, so we need to get more news outlets in the Twin Cities?
Well, you know, I think the Twin Cities has a great, we have lost some wonderful publications, including City Pages, The Growler, Southwest Journal, but we still have a fairly strong news ecosystem here. And in fact, I think that's one of the appeals for Axios coming in. What we offer is so different: our free newsletters, the style in which we write, the focus, our smart brevity focus, our mission of getting you smarter about the news in your own backyard faster. It's different than what other outlets have to offer. We're trying these local newsletters out in a number of markets, as you mentioned. And I think, you know, one thing that when I heard about this, that I thought the Twin Cities is a great market for this, one reason is because we have such a civically engaged and involved readership and population here, right? Like, the Twin Cities is filled with people who love to support the media, local media, and read the news. And so I think, you know, in addition to providing a service in the local news industry, we saw an audience here as well.
Well, I think you've definitely hit on something here. I like the idea of it. More voices is always a good thing. And the reality is I think that I've already looking through your first newsletter, I'm enjoying the fact that there are some things here that haven't really gotten covered that much anywhere else, which is, let's start off with Mike Lindell. You actually, your first one big thing, you talk a little bit about Mike Lindell and the chance that he is possibly thinking about a gubernatorial run.
Yeah, so Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow, a big kind of Trump ally in the state, spoke at dozens of rallies for the president, the former president, and was his honorary campaign chair, has been talking for a while about running for governor as a Republican. I think at first some Republicans were a little excited by that prospect. You know, he's a rich guy, maybe he can sell funds. He's, you know, got a reputation, a high profile. Recently, he's really become embroiled in a lot of promoting claims that have no basis in fact about the election and that have been disputed and in many cases proven incorrect. And so there's been some more reservations among a lot of Republicans about whether this guy is the best person to put forward for their party against Governor Tim Walz. I asked Mike Lindell about this. He has changed his tune a little bit about when he'd decide. He said before he'd run if Donald Trump won. Then he still said he was 95% sure this month he would run. And, you know, he left the door open, but he also said to me, I'm not going to decide until I finish fighting my claims of voter fraud, and essentially suggested he would prevail. And he kind of said, if I don't think that the ballot machines and the systems are work, why would I run? So he's also opening the door to bow out here. So only time will tell. We don't have an answer quite yet, but that's the latest on where he stands.
Well, and it's a nightmare to a point. It is a bit of a nightmare scenario for the Republicans. The people that like Trump, which have, let's be honest, I mean, ever since really 2004, there has been more and more of a welcoming of that far right fringe into the Republican Party mainstream. And where you have a political party that generally tries to, I mean, when you have a first-term president that loses, The mentality is that let's move past this. Let's move on to the next guy. The reality is the people that the Republican Party have welcomed into their party don't want to let this go. And a guy like Lindell will be wildly popular in their primary process for the for a governor's seat. You know, do we know of anyone else in the party that's kind of contemplating maybe doing a run against Walz in 2022?
Yeah, so you raise a good point that Lindell could be a good, you know, have some strong support among maybe endorsement delegates who are voting for the endorsement in the Republican Party, big Trump fans, parts of the party's base. At the same time, Republicans haven't won here statewide in several election cycles, and there's a real sense that in order to do so, they need to appeal to suburban voters and voters and make inroads in Hennepin County. And, you know, a lot of consultants worry that someone like Lindell, a little bombastic, kind of unpredictable, isn't necessarily that person. In terms of other candidates, you know, Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, a state legislator from the kind of Lakes area, East Bull Lake, he is mulling a run. You know, people talk about former Viking Matt Burke being interested. He has not confirmed that to me. I've asked him for comments. I don't have anything there. Former State Senator Scott Jensen, a medical doctor who's gotten a lot of attention and scrutiny for some of his own COVID comments, is thinking about a run. And there's a couple of other wild cards in there. We will have a full rundown in a newsletter later this week.
I'll be fascinated if Jensen makes it, because he's already got a problem with it, with his race. I mean, he caved to the Republican Party on his own, you know, emergency insulin bill. And I mean, that was a real head scratcher. It's going to be hard for him to come back. And I know they eventually passed a bill that preserved profit margins for some of the insulin manufacturers. But at the same time, I mean, if he would have just gone there and pushed that bill through, the original Alex Smith emergency insulin bill, he would have a signature piece of legislation that he went against his own party on. And yeah, he would be dangerous, I think, for Walz. But because of how that all played out, I'd be interested to see how he's going to be able to recover that image of, you know, basically almost breaking down in tears as he had to vote against his own bill.
Senator Jensen has quite an interesting legislative record. I'm sure it'll all be rehashed if he runs. You know, he's bucked his party a couple of times on different bills, whether it's gun control, marijuana legislation, conversion therapy ban, but then sometimes he flips back the other way. So he definitely has an interesting record, a lot to delve into there.
Mm-hmm. Tori Van Oots joining us right now, the Axios Twin Cities newsletter. We'll tell you how to get signed up for this here in just a little bit. You also touched on today vaccines. It's a twofold problem. I mean, once again, last week, to the horror of many of us, we realized, A, there was no vaccine, you know, repository. There was no backup vaccines, as Trump had kind of insisted there was. And there was also no vaccine delivery plan, which also was a big shocker. You know, on the national level, we're dealing with Joe Biden having to get ramped up here and very quickly. On the stateside level here, the repercussions of the lack of vaccines, plus the realization is that, you know, a first come, first serve system doesn't necessarily work. Talk a little bit about how these things are playing out right now.
Yeah, state officials are really kind of struggling with balancing this right now because the demand is way higher than the supply that they're getting at this point in time. You know, we've been getting between 60 and 70,000 doses a week. You're talking about needing to vaccinate 3 million people in the state. About 2 million people, I think, at least right now are eligible in these first couple of batches. So, you know, they've been balancing the best way to do this. As you mentioned, you know, today they've announced a new program, a new way to sign up. 24 hours, like a lottery. You know, you sign up and then you're in a lottery for a senior for a pilot site. Of course, people can also try to go through their healthcare providers. The idea is that it'll cause less stress and confusion, you know, less time to refresh the computer constantly, website crashes. But the fact remains that there aren't going to be enough vaccines right now for everybody who wants one. Mm-hmm. And that applies for teachers too. When they set aside 15,000 additional doses, that's a big chunk of the doses we got this week for teachers, because teachers, as we know, are going back into the classroom, elementary teachers across the state last month and this month. They want the vaccines, right? If they're going back into the classrooms. And that's still, there's hundreds of thousands of teachers in the state, though, and you're talking about 15,000 doses for educators. So it's a real challenge. And on the bright side, as we reported today, you know, Governor Walz and MDH are hopeful, state health officials are hopeful that the Biden administration's plan, which many have said is like reasonable and achievable to you know, keep this pace of vaccinations up about a million vaccinations a day, will lead to more doses coming here. So if we get more supply and some of the logistical and communication kinks get worked out in these next couple of weeks, we could have a little bit more of a normal life by summer. You know, I wouldn't take it to the bank, but but it's a possibility.
I already know I'm going to be on the last end of this, but so I kind of just I'm resignated to my future.
I'm at the very end. Yeah,
it's going to be a while. But I will say
I'm
this:
I'm 34 year old woman. I'm at the very end. No health condition.
So, I just don't think they like me. So I'm that's why I'm at the end. So, but I will say this about it is that we do have these other vaccines that are coming through the line. If we can get four manufacturers of vaccines going here, I think that it's not going to be ideal. And like you said, we are still looking at a summer thing here, getting to that point. But the reality is that I think our potential, it will be brighter on the horizon if we can get those other two vaccines out there and going as well.
Yeah. And those are one-dose vaccines. That's the other big difference. So
yeah.
When you're talking about when we get a certain number of doses, if we get 60,000, now we're getting some second, you know, doses that are reserved for second doses. But at the beginning, you took the number of doses that you saw and you had to divide it by two because everybody needs two doses for weeks apart or whatever it is. But, you know, hopefully soon that'll change. And the new vaccines are also about to be easier to transport and store. So you'll be able to go to your Walgreens or your employer or wherever and get it versus, you know, having to have this super duper cold freezer to store it until the very last minute.
I want to also touch on something that's because of the coronavirus, the delivery companies here, you've got a story on the delivery companies. It doesn't surprise me. What's kind of interesting is that we actually have had a few cities that have said these delivery companies have become so popular that they're actually capping the fees on the apps that they can charge to restaurants to prevent the restaurants from basically losing money on these delivery services.
Yeah, so restaurants have said, you know, this is, on one hand, this is a lifeline, especially when in-person dining is closed. You know, we need delivery to get by. On the other hand, you know, the apps aren't free. They're business too, right? They charge. And restaurants have complained here and across the country that the fees kind of make the business barely even worth it. They eat in so much, you know, the profit margins are already so small. So a couple of cities, including Minneapolis and St. Paul, have temporarily capped those fees. The app companies have warned, all right, you know, we have to make our money too. The cost might just shift around. It's unclear, you know, how that'll end up affecting the consumer, the person ordering at the end of the day. But for the time being, restaurants got a little bit of a break there, a little bit of a reprieve from the cities if they're using these apps, which I don't know about you, but I've noticed way more restaurants in my neighborhood and delivery area are on the apps than they were a year ago, even so.
The margins are the key. I mean, I know a lot of people that work in the restaurant industry, and this is not an industry where there's tons of money being made on a normal cycle. It is fascinating, though, because I was on one of the charts you put out here. It talks about how DoorDash is really – it does seem like DoorDash is mopping the floor with the other versions of these app systems. Is there a specific reason why DoorDash is doing better than Grubhub, Uber Eats, and Postmates?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, DoorDash is one of the bigger companies. I don't know if they were more established here or they just got more restaurants on board. That's a great question that I haven't really dug into yet. But yeah, they were. And the other thing to remember is the chart, if you look at the newsletter, is index sales. So it's pretty much like the growth in sales compared to 2018. Mm-hmm. So DoorDash saw the biggest growth in sales compared to their 2018 sales here. So there could be all sorts of reasons for that. But yeah, it did seem to do quite well.
I am actually amazed. I'm 52. I'll just go to the restaurant and pick up my food. I don't need to go get me trying to figure out an app anyway. I mean, I just stare at my phone for a while. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I am amazed, but at the same time, it's almost as if I wonder what will happen to these companies when this is all over. Will people still just say, you know what, I'm going to just still with the delivery, or will people go on out? Because I don't think people are going to go away from the delivery nearly as much as people think they will.
Yeah, that's the big question. I mean, that's the question about all sorts of changes to pandemic life. And I mean, even think about, you know, the budget, the state budget. One of the big issues is school funding every year. Well, a lot of kids have kind of dropped out of the public school system this year, whether they're homeschooling, private schooling, just been kind of falling through the cracks. How are we supposed to plan if we don't know if people are going to go back, right? Or coffee shops, are people going to go back to coffee shops? You know, every day, go to a Starbucks every day once you go back to the office again? Or did you find that making your coffee at home worked just fine? So there's all of these ways that it's going to be so fascinating to watch, you know, really shapes the rest of our lives, at least in the short term.
Things are definitely going to change. I keep on top of the news. I also want to mention that in the first Axios Twin Cities newsletter, they cover the wild. They also have some good lunch suggestions here. So there's a lot of great information here, not just the main news, but it's a nice, well-rounded newsletter. I want everyone to get signed, because I think this is just, I'm glad you guys are doing this. So where can go to get signed up for Axios Twin Cities?
Yes, you can go to axios.com/local. That's AXIOS. And you'll be able to sign up for our Twin Cities newsletter if you happen to care about local news in Des Moines, Denver, Charlotte, or Tampa. Go for that, too. My colleagues in Tampa had a very busy first day today with the Super Bowl news. But, yeah, we'd love for you to join us and reach out, you know, and let us know what you want to hear about life in the Twin Cities. We're here to cover the community, so.
And you do tell people you want people to reply. You want basically to hear from people out there. So input is very important.
Maybe tomorrow. I'm digging through my inbox. I love it. I have hundreds of emails. I'm trying to respond to everyone. So if you emailed me, laying in there. But please do let us know.
Give it a few days, people. Give it a few days. It's going to be popular. Tori Van Hoot, once again, it's Axios Twin Cities, their brand new newsletter, axios.com/local. I'll make sure I link to everything out there. Tori, thank you very much, and congratulations once again.
Thanks for having me. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Tori Van Hoot, once again, Axios Twin Cities, the brand new newsletter. You should get it. It's actually quite good. We'll take a break, come on back, and wrap up the show. When we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.